My name is Dr. James Day. I'm a clinical research training fellow at UCL in London. And I'm here today with Dr. Gloria Iacoboni, who is a CAR T and cellular therapy specialist at Valdebron Hospital in Barcelona, Spain. And we're here to talk about Gloria's very exciting talk today on CAR T therapy in high-grade lymphoma. So, Gloria, could you just start by giving us a summary of your talk this afternoon?
Yes. So today, you know, very exciting here in first edition of Soho UK, I talked about how to improve CAR T cell therapy outcomes in lymphoma. So I covered a series of topics. You know, there are different approaches to improving outcomes. You know, one would be trying to improve patient selection. And we learned a lot of lessons from pivotal trials and real-world data reports, how to select those patients that have a higher chance of benefiting from this treatment modality. So patients with a better performance status, patients with a lower tumor burden, patients who respond to bridging, all of those patients, you know, have a higher chance of achieving a durable remission. Other factors, such as AIDS or comorbidities, which were important in the transplant setting, not so much in the CAR T cell setting. However, they do need to be taken into consideration as they can be associated, you know, with increased toxicity in patients with an older, you know, AIDS or, you know, multiple severe comorbidities. I think the other important factor would be how to improve the actual, you know, construct. So there's different ways to do that. We can consider rapid manufacturing of CD19 positive CAR T cell products. And I think great example of that is the YTB323 or rapcabtagene autoleucel product, which published already their data a couple of years ago, showing, you know, a high efficacy and, you know, a very good tolerability with low rates of CRS and ICANS. However, still small numbers, so we need further data with that construct. And now we have really exciting data coming from dual targeted CAR T cell products, CD19, CD20 targeted. So we have products from Miltenyi, from Lyell, from Janssen, from Kite, which have phase one data. Miltenyi's Zamtacel already has, you know, a randomized trial compared with R-GMOX. But we are going to have in these coming years randomized head-to-head CAR T versus CAR T trials comparing CD19 targeted with CD19, CD20 targeted CAR T cell products. Also adding on the layer of, you know, tweaking the manufacturing for those CD19, CD20 manufacture, you know, targeted products, trying to add the, you know, the beneficial impact of that to the dual targeted approach. And as other approaches, which I think are interesting, novel targets. So let's exit the CD19, CD20, you know, setting. What about CD22? Data presented at ASH with firi-cel. You know, the efficacy wasn't as great as expected, but that's still being explored in other lymphoma subtypes aside from large B-cell lymphoma. We also have BAFAR and other targets which are being explored. Combinations, so combining CAR T cell therapy with immune checkpoint inhibitors, with rituximab, with bispecifics, all of these trials, you know, have shown preliminary efficacy and preliminary data, but we still need to see how those trials evolve to have a better grasp of the benefit they can provide. And finally, I think it's really exciting to see, you know, kind of novelty, you know, insights. You know, we know that circadian rhythms play a role in, you know, immune activation and effector function. So how does the time of day when we infuse CAR T cells impact CAR T cell efficacy? Should we infuse them earlier? Is that associated to an improved efficacy, you know, after CAR T cell therapy? So all of these strategies are being currently explored, and we'll see more of that data in the next years.
Thank you very much, Gloria. That was a brilliant synopsis of your talk this morning. And you've covered so many different areas. If I can just touch on a few of those in some more detail, if that's all right. So one of the things that you mentioned is that patients with a higher tumor burden tend to do worse than CAR T therapy. But we know that the aim is to start looking at using CAR T in earlier lines of treatment. Do you have any concerns that if we're using CAR T much earlier, that there will be a higher tumor burden in those patients and therefore they may do worse from CAR T therapy?
I mean, I think that's a great question. What we've learned as we move CAR T, commercial CAR T, from the third line setting to the second line setting, is that overall, I think patients are being referred to us or we're identifying them with a lower tumor burden. We, of course, have the really refractory, aggressive, you know, subgroup of patients. off the front line. But in general, we have lots of patients who achieve the partial remission or a PR to frontline and have a lower tumor burden at time of becoming CAR T cell candidates compared to those we had in the third plus line setting who had, you know, progressed after at least two or more lines of immunochemotherapy. So overall, I think we're selecting patients better and patients are being referred earlier and with a lower tumor burden in the commercial, let's say, second line setting. Talking about frontline CAR T trials, we have the Zuma 23 as an example of that, upfront randomization after one cycle of immunochemotherapy to axi-cel versus standard of care with R-TOP or those adjusted R-EPOC. It's interesting because patients, by the time they receive the axi-cel infusion, have received at least two cycles of immunochemotherapy. So the first cycle, you know, wherever they were diagnosed, and then a second cycle is bridging therapy, even up to a third cycle in that bridging period. So by the time they receive the axi-cel infusion, tumor burden is actually, you know, quite low, and they receive kind of that debulking treatment with the R-TOP, you know, two or three cycles. So overall, I get the feeling that these, you know, patients being treated in earlier lines of therapy do not have a higher tumor burden than what we were seeing in the third line plus. Quite on the contrary, perhaps, you know, lower tumor burden due to a series of factors, as I mentioned.
Okay, that's very helpful. Thank you. And another thing that you mentioned today was that the rates of CRS are still extremely high. In some of the trials that you mentioned, they were 100%, if I remember correctly. And I just wanted to know what your current management is in terms of how you monitor and treat these patients who develop CRS. Do you try and treat it as early as possible? Do you wait? And can you just give us a bit more about how you manage CRS?
Yeah, so thank you for that question. I'm actually very keen on that specific, you know, subject because we've been doing lots of research at Vall d'Hebron regarding that. So we currently intervene at CRS grade 2 or higher with tocilizumab and or steroids. And we usually watch the patient when they have CRS grade 1. If that CRS grade 1, you know, is prolonged in time, you know, obviously, you know, beyond 72 hours, especially if it's a high fever and the patient, you know, has, you know, symptoms derived from that CRS grade 1, we do consider intervening at that time point. But we do not have a very aggressive, very early intervention approach. Other centers are considering intervening when the patient develops CRS in the first 24 hours, CRS grade 1, intervening with tocilizumab and or steroids at that time point. So we actually have conducted a study, multicenter study, including some European sites and many Spanish sites, comparing the outcomes in terms of efficacy and toxicity between an early management intervening in CRS grade 1 versus a more, call it conventional, traditional management intervening in CRS grade 2 or higher. And we have seen a lower rate of CRS grade 2 or higher as can be expected with the earlier intervention strategy. But this does not seem to impact ICANS. It does not seem to impact efficacy. So that's comforting. You know, both strategies seem to have the same efficacy. And we have seen more cytopenias with a very early, especially neutropenia, with a very early intervention. So in my opinion, I think it's not one or the other. I think it's kind of a tailoring, you know, approach where, you know, usually, I would at least wait 24, 48 hours, get the cultures, get the patient on antibiotics, rule out an infection. If the fever is persistent, is high, is impacting the patient in terms of, you know, systemic symptoms or tachycardia, even if it's not developing into a CRS grade 2 or higher, you can consider intervention. But in general, you know, we do wait for a CRS grade 2 or higher, which is not common among centers, but that's the way we're still approaching our patients in terms of CRS intervention.
Okay. Thank you. Again, that was very helpful and informative. And given all that you said today about how successful CAR T therapy is, do you still think there is a role for bispecific T cell engagers and ADCs in high-grade lymphoma in a young, fit adult?
So I think that's a great question because we have so many trials presenting, you know, positive data and encouraging data with, you know, with glofitamab, with epcoritamab in the second line setting in combination with chemotherapy. And we are now finally receiving reimbursement for some of these strategies. We just got reimbursement for the STARGLO regimen in Spain, glofitamab, GMOX. So, I mean, definitely these are options we have to consider. I think currently in the large B-cell lymphoma setting, the data for CAR T is still stronger in terms of long-term follow-up, curative potential, real-world data, you know, thousands of patients treated outside the trial setting with the same results as the trials. So if both options are on the table, I would still consider going first for CAR T-cell therapy. But it is true that some countries do not have CAR T-cell therapy available or have, you know, really long, you know, turnaround times or obstacles to reach CAR T-cell therapy. And there, I think it's great to have, you know, other alternative options such as bispecifics in combination. Usually in my practice, we would reserve that for patients who are not CAR T-cell candidates or after CAR T-cell failure. However, I think, you know, this is a really rapidly shifting landscape. I think bispecifics are currently being tested with chemotherapy or chemoimmunotherapy in the frontline setting in large B-cell lymphoma. And I think these trials, honestly, at least some of them will be positive. So I think in the future, it's very probable that bispecifics will jump into the frontline and CAR T-cells will remain a second-line treatment or even a frontline treatment for very high risk, such as a ZUMA-23 IPI 4-5. But still, I think it will be bispecifics plus chemo, you know, in whatever way that looks, because now there's trials looking at, you know, reducing the intensity of chemotherapy, but bispecifics in the front line plus some type of chemo and CAR T cells in that second line after bispecifics or in the front line for very high risk patients. And that's how I think the algorithm would look like in the future.
Amazing. Thank you. It's outstanding how quickly the field is moving and how the immunotherapies are shifting between the different lines. And I think you sum that up really nicely. I think just to finish, you mentioned the dual targeting CD19, CD20 T-cell products. Do you think that in the future, the CD19 mono targeting CAR T or the dual targeting CAR T is going to end up being the more successful?
I mean, I think, to be honest, many of the pharmaceutical companies are betting on that. I mean, they've jumped from really limited phase one data with, you know, 25 patients to randomized phase three clinical trials. We have the J&J, we have the Kite, we have the Lyell trials ongoing. And as I mentioned, the Pinnacle head-to-head, so the Lyell trial has already started recruiting. So when that happens, they're usually, you know, betting on that for a reason. I mean, I definitely think they can, you know, overturn the current standard, which is Axi-cel or Liso-cel. And, you know, I do think also, you know, Kite obviously has interest in that because, you know, Liso-cel is increasing in its use and Axi-cel is kind of falling behind a bit because of the tox profile. So I do think they want to potentially replace their own CAR T with another CAR T. So I do think that in the future, you know, some of these trials might be positive. Remember, not only dual targeted CD19, CD20, but also tweaking the manufacturing. So they have two components to their trials. You know, they're tweaking the manufacturing, higher fraction of naive T cells. So T cell stemness, more efficacy because of that, and the dual targeting quality. So they have, you know, several factors in favor of being a positive trial. I do think they would potentially change the treatment landscape and the CAR T-cell products that we will choose in the future. But, you know, very early stage, some of these trials have not even opened yet. So we'll hold on to that thought and see what they look like in future meetings.
Thank you. Thanks so much for talking to me today with Soho Insider and for your brilliant talk this morning at Soho UK.
Thank you for the interview and thank you for your attention.